The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but if God is such a loving God, why doesn't he fix our stupid economy? Well, if you'll recall, there's this other person named Barack Obama. Many seemed to think he was God, and they elected him to fix our economy. I'll be discussing Obama's State of the Union message in just a few minutes. Meanwhile, I do believe that God, the real God, sometimes expects us to do things for ourselves. Yes, he provides financially when the situation is out of control, and often he provides in his mercy even when our control louses things up. But as a general rule, God wants us to also use the brain he gave us. God wants us to make wise decisions about what we purchase. For example, when adding up, and I hate confessing this, but when adding up how much money over the years I've wasted on fast food, I think I have a lot to answer to. Many tell me that I'm not eating right. I don't worry about that. I do sometimes think about the money I've wasted. Fast food costs a lot. Now, in my defense, lately, I've been cutting down. I did not stop eating fast food altogether. I didn't become a fanatic about it, but I am paying more attention to the special deals. As a matter of fact, fast food restaurants seem to have figured out how to navigate through today's horrible economy. So many of them are selling hamburgers and chicken sandwiches and little nuggets and other similar items for only a buck. Even if you buy three such items, chances are you are paying half to one-third of what you paid in the past. Of course, bigger meals such as the Baconator can still be found on their menu. Maybe they're hoping that once the cheap stuff draws us in, we'll be enticed by pricier morsels. That's okay. It's okay. I do not begrudge them any chance to make a profit. On the other hand, one of my favorite drive-thrus is trying to pull a little stunt. No, they're not being dishonest. Not exactly, but they certainly border on it. I won't embarrass these guys by naming the franchise, but they specialize in hot dogs. So maybe you can figure it out. Now, let me explain what they're hoping you will not figure out. A short while ago, this place had a deal called 3 for $3, meaning any three items from a selected menu for only $3. 3 for $3. Doesn't that sound good? Has a ring to it. 3 for $3. Well, after people got used to this for a month or so, this generous, economically sound offer, the sign was changed, and it now reads $3 for $3.99. Clever, huh? It still looks and sounds like 3 for $3, but it's actually 3 for $4. Oh, sure, you can relish their technical fact that the price is truly and honestly 1 cent less than $4, but an additional 99 cents is really an additional dollar for all intents and purposes, actually more than a dollar when you consider tax. One must wonder how many hours faded into the night while big shot executives sound around a polished Coke table, deciding to dress up this sign so that upon first glance, it still kind of, sort of, looks like 3 for $3. What makes them think they can get away with such nonsense? It's simple. They're hoping you are just that stupid. Our president has the same hope. Have you heard the big news? The big news. He, President Obama, is calling for a spending freeze. A Democrat calling for a spending freeze. This was the buzz of talk radio and cable news for a day or two leading up to the State of the Union address, where Obama finally talked about his bold new idea more officially. And then after going on and on about how we need to freeze spending, Obama adds a quick little disclaimer, almost as an aside, the freeze will not take place until next year. You could actually hear people gasp in the room as he said it. Have you noticed that we're still at the very beginning of this year? Meanwhile, Obama introduces new ideas that will call for billions of dollars in new spending. Then, a year from now, the freeze will come, keeping his gargantuan programs intact. And yet, even then, he won't be calling for all spending to be frozen anyway. How does our leader say this stuff with a straight face? Elementary, dear Watson, he, like my favorite hot dog joint, is hoping you are just that stupid. He's thinking if people were stupid enough to vote for him, they'll be stupid enough to listen to this other stuff. Unfortunately for Obama, voters seem to be waking up, even some of the ones who did vote for him. And we've all done stupid things. So look, if you voted for Obama, I forgive you. I'm not saying you're a stupid person. I'm not. I'm saying you did a stupid thing at that particular moment of your life when you went into the voting booth. But no, that doesn't mean you're stupid from morning to sunset. And a lot of you are waking up, and I appreciate that. And I've heard of penitent people who said this was the mistake of my life, and I appreciate that. Will Obama himself wake up, as some of the voters have? That's the question so many are asking. Personally, I think the man is already wide awake. I am not one of those who believes Obama is dumb. I find him extremely intelligent and very capable. Unfortunately, he is using his talents and skills to bring about the kinds of changes I do not believe in. You know, everybody else was always worried, is this guy going to break his campaign promises? I was listening to what that guy was promising, and I was thinking, God, please keep him from keeping his campaign promises. He has this agenda, and he seems to be going ahead with this agenda despite the recent change in the ocean tide. In the aftermath of Scott Brown's history-making victory in the liberal state of Massachusetts, President Obama's advisors are probably telling him this would not have happened without entities such as conservative talk radio or that horrible Fox News. And if they're mad enough to do something about such pesky media, we may have at least a partial explanation for a State of the Union message, which demonstrated little more compromise than a few obligatory words about bipartisanship. As a matter of fact, this speech gave every indication that Obama plans to plow ahead with his agenda, be it health care, cap and trade, or any of his other amorphous policies designed, as he put it himself in the 2008 campaign, designed to transform America. Now, naturally, we don't have to assume that Obama will succeed with his ambitious wish list. It may depend upon his ability to shut down free speech. Yes, you heard me correctly. Shut down free speech. I had already noted a couple of weeks ago in an article I wrote for San Diego Newsroom that prior to Massachusetts 2010, Democrats in power did not seem to be worried about the many polls suggesting that they might be out looking for new jobs in November. When Christmas was over, when January came, Congress planned to deliver a belated Christmas present, health care reform. Even Nancy Dear was promising it would be out around Christmas time. And it was a little bit belated, but they were going to give it to us. There's nothing wrong with a belated gift, right? True, it was a gift most Americans did not want, according to one poll after another. For an example, a Rasmussen poll showed 52% of Americans at that time in opposition. Congress didn't seem to care. Those who predicted that the likes of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid would eventually listen to the will of the people were dropping their jaws with amazement. For myself, I saw no surprises. After all, they ignored the volcanic reaction of 2009 that rallied crowds too big to accurately count in a new phenomenon nicknamed Tea Parties. They also licked their wounds after taking it on the chin from one town hall meeting after another. Those kinds of gatherings also had record turnouts. And an extra added twist, frank, boisterous questions leaving many politicians shocked or caught off guard or just downright depressed. Other elected officials, noticing a pattern, decided to skip town hall meetings altogether. But if senators and congressmen were forgetting their constituents, that did not mean their constituents were forgetting about them in November 2010 election. They were letting them know. And presumably, if the healthcare poll does not concern our leaders, their own personal numbers should. According to Rasmussen, only 32% of Americans believe Congress is paying attention to the interests of the citizens. Harry Reid himself has that same 32% approval rating from his own state of Nebraska. And so, as Democrats plow ahead, ignoring data and ignoring people, conservatives are looking forward to November with enthusiasm. Now, I got to tell you, I too am optimistic, but only cautiously so. And today I want to talk about the caution. Because, folks, a more sobering examination is warranted. I have to wonder why so many of our nation's shepherds prior to Massachusetts were not worried about re-election. I could more easily believe that an elephant might fly than to accept the idea of politicians not caring about remaining in power. I mean, that kind of thing just barely ever happens. Oh, the talking point, of course, was that they were putting the good of the people. Oh, no, not the people. Whenever they say it, it's the good of the American people. I'm doing this for the American people. We're putting the good of the American people ahead of the polls. But, you know, that makes no sense when those same polls tell us what the people truly want, what the people truly think is good. Now, sure, certainly there may be a handful of senators and a handful of congressmen who would rather be a part of history than get reelected. But generally speaking, Washington does not breed this type of animal. Instead, I wonder what is going on behind closed doors. Those same doors Obama promised to keep open through C-SPAN about 8 different times during his campaign. What was promised? Did he assure his Democratic Congress that despite the polls, they would indeed be reelected after all? Now, my listeners know I am not into conspiracy theories. I'm only asking a question here, but it's a question that deserves to be asked. We already know what kinds of lucrative deals were offered to the likes of Senator Mary Landrieu and Senator Ben Nelson with our tax money. Now, if this kind of shameless bribery is out in the open, one can only imagine what remains covered up. Does Obama know something we don't know? Does he foresee reduced freedom of speech that might stifle the kinds of rallies or broadcasts necessary for conservatives to maintain their momentum? Now, if this sounds like a far-fetched question, I remind you that this is the same president who tried to prohibit news organizations from obtaining information from Fox News. I'm not kidding. He sat him down in a room and he said, no more news from Fox News is going to go to you. Otherwise, I won't give you any interviews. Well, that idea backfired. He withdrew it immediately. But didn't it show us how Obama honestly feels about dissenting speech? Meanwhile, there's more than one way to skin a cat. How about a bill crawling its way through Congress that would give Obama complete control over the internet? Now, it's true, internet czar Susan Crawford has resigned, but the bill is still alive. Meanwhile, let's not forget what Crawford stood for in as much as Obama himself appointed her. Crawford, who has ties to both Acorn and the One Day Web Project, says about the internet, we should do a better job as a nation of making sure fast, affordable broadband is as ubiquitous as electricity, water, snail mail, or any other public utility. We'll be right back to talk about Obama and free speech in quotes. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Some more beautiful.
Welcome back to our program. Obama's internet czar, when she was around, before she resigned, but he did appoint her, so this still tells you how he feels, said that broadband should be as ubiquitous as electricity, water, snail mail, or any other public utility. In other words, people, some of that stimulus package that helped out the banks and the auto industry will now disperse funds which make the internet more accessible to those who cannot afford to pay for an internet provider. That's the desire. But as we have already seen, once the government throws their gold coins, they become a partial owner and feel entitled to attach regulations like Christmas lights on a purse string. By an amazing coincidence, One Web Day Project lists Free Press as a participating organization. Free Press was founded by self-professed Marxist Robert McKenzie. McKenzie recently said over a website called Socialist Project, instead of waiting for the revolution to happen, we learned that unless you make significant changes in the media, it will be vastly more difficult to have a revolution. Concurrently, Obama's other czar, Mark Lloyd, wants FCC regulations for more diversity on the radio. It's time to start connecting the dots, people. Once the government runs the internet, they will complain that we do not have enough diversity over the World Wide Web, just as we hear too much conservative chit-chat over the airwaves. Now, honestly, really, truly, can you think of anything, and I mean anything, more diverse than the internet right now? Politics run the gamut of blogs like townhall.com to moveon.org to the Huffington Post. On the web, you can find every conceivable opinion about religion, film, culture, sports, fishing, boating, sex, kitchen patterns, pets, even 17th century British embroidery must be on there somewhere. And we need more diversity? More diversity? Give me a break. That's only code for diversity, which respects different people groups. That sounds nice too, but that's only code for we must not offend certain people, which is code for it will be against the law to say anything that is not politically correct, or more accurately put, anything Obama does not want us to say. The man doesn't care about sensitivity. The man doesn't care about combating offensive words so much as he cares about power. The major newspapers are not enough. Every television news network except Fox is not enough. PBS and NPR, paid for by your tax dollars, is not enough. Our president does not want to be criticized anywhere at all. Period. That's it. And if he has to flush out the last bastion of free speech like a bloodhound on a fox hunt, well, saddle up, czars. Obama's proposed laws are designed around diversity, the way submarines were designed to explore creeks. The only speculation here is whether or not Obama and his friends will succeed in their goals. If prior to Massachusetts they smelled victory in the winds, they may have had reason to discourage Congress from worrying about November 2010. Of course, considering how much simultaneous legislation is going on both publicly and behind closed doors, he made a promise many other things that we couldn't even begin to dream about in our wildest nightmares. Bottom line, since politicians tend to worry about elections, it's not too much of a stretch to figure out Obama promised them something. Okay, that's a little bit of review because that is the way things looked to me before Massachusetts. And as I said, I wrote a lot of that for the San Diego Newsroom. Okay, so moving on. What has been going on since then? Well, of course, 2 weeks ago, this landslide election, losing the Ted Kennedy seat, certainly woke up some of the Democrats. But Obama himself, he still sounds strangely confident that his dreams will be fulfilled. As a matter of fact, the panic around him in Washington may only serve as an inspiration to hit back hard and hit back fast. How? Well, one way I just told you about, they're trying to take over the internet. Another way is to resurrect an old FCC regulation ended by Ronald Reagan. You've heard me talk about it many times on this show, called the Fairness Doctrine. And yes, I know you don't have to call me. I'm aware that Obama publicly stated that he is against the Fairness Doctrine. But remember, this man is a genius at communication, unlike his far less subtle Congress. People like Nancy Pelosi, people like Richard Durbin, people like John Kerry have all voiced enthusiastic support for the Fairness Doctrine. A Republican bill that would have outlawed its return has met resistance and little chance of passing. As for Obama himself, oh, true. Oh, sure. He says he is against it. But let's face facts. Obama is an expert at saying one thing and doing the exact opposite. Obama says he has no desire to take over banks. Obama says he has no desire to take over the auto industry. Obama says he has no desire to grow government. Obama said he would allow C-SPAN into negotiations about health care. He said it 8 times. Obama said he didn't believe in earmarks, and he's behind this health care disaster, the biggest earmark bill in history. Then, in his State of the Union address last week, he says that he's against earmarks. He says that again. And he said things must be out in open again. You see, this guy thinks he's such a great speaker that he can do whatever he wants and then explain to you afterwards that he didn't really do it. And so, Obama says he's not in favor of the Fairness Doctrine, but I have shown you that he is. Who cares what he calls it? They'll pass that thing, and he'll come on TV the next day and just say, I just want you to know, this was not the Fairness Doctrine. Just want you to know, I'm all for free speech. We got to have sensitive speech. We got to have responsible speech. We got to have enough diversity for us to tell you what kind of speech to put on, but hey, it's free speech. And he's hoping people go, oh, okay, if the president says it's free speech, then it must be free speech. All right, meanwhile, back to our personal economy. Like I told you, I have been trying to cut down expenses lately, not just with fast food. Even on my day off, when I often head for the multiplex cinema and view a matinee. Now, on one particular fine, crisp winter morning just 2 weeks ago, I took out an unused Christmas gift, a free movie card, and I headed for the mall, stopped off first at Walmart, where I bought 2 small bags of candy for only $1 each instead of the $80 per bag I would pay to the theater. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I'll confess, I did stuff the candy into my jacket pockets. In fact, it wasn't even a cold day. I wore the jacket just to stuff the candy into my jacket pockets. Because most theaters today do not allow you to buy candy of your own when they can charge you $80 for the same box of hot tamales. Now, some of you Christians may take issue with the ethics, but to me, the only transaction I owe a movie theater is that of paying for my movie ticket. If they also want to not allow candy in their theater for some particular reason, fine. But that's not the rule either. You see, well, all right, no need to digress. You get the point. Right or wrong, there are enough real sins in my life that I'm not going to take on this one, too. And so I had the cheapest movie experience money could buy or not buy, as was partially the case. A perfect day, to be sure, until I returned home and realized I left my jacket in the theater. I left it there because I had taken the thing off because I was so warm. When I returned to the theater, the jacket was gone. None of the ushers remembered seeing it. Nobody had turned it into lost and found. I liked my jacket. It was an expensive jacket, but hey, how about all that money I saved going to the movies? This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. back to the Bob Siegel Show. If you'd like to weigh in on any of this, our call in toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. That's 1-888-344-1170. And we also take your email questions, questions@bobsiegel.net, questions@bobsiegel.net. And because I keep entering the 21st century kicking and screaming, I'm now on Twitter, where you can leave comments. I'm now on Facebook. Just go to my profile on Facebook and go to my wall and just go ahead and write me what you want. We might get your emails even faster that way. I guess technically it's not an email when you put it on Facebook, but it's kind of like an email. Anyway, this is from John. He says, Bob, I first read your testimony and was truly blessed by it. I thank our Lord every time when someone is born again, even more so for the house of Israel. He's referring to the fact that I am a Jewish Christian. And John continues to say, reading this article about so-called Calvinists is a little disheartening. Okay, I wrote an article that you can still find on my website, and it's called St. Bob's Epistle to the Calvinists. Calvinists are people who believe that God predestines who's going to be saved and who isn't going to be saved. And I was, in a tongue-in-cheek way, challenging Calvinists not to change their theology. They can have whatever theology they want. I don't agree with them. I don't think they do a really good job of interpreting the scripture in context, but I don't have any problem. I would never judge the spirituality of a Calvinist, but I've met some Calvinists who tell you that you ought to pack a picnic lunch if you're not a Calvinist. So I was challenging them being a little too arrogant, a little too dogmatic. Anyway, so this is the article that John is referring to. He read this article and he says, first, we should be called followers of Christ, Christians, and our authority comes from God's word alone. I think we should study God's word and discuss it and desire to know the true. And if our understanding of a subject is wrong, let us change. I think that's probably a little hint for me to change and read the scripture more correctly. He continues, the Holy Spirit convicts and teaches us what we are to know. Let us all humble ourselves and seek to glorify our God. Well, that sounds good, John, but let's see where we're going with this. He says, I do not think if you believe either way affects if you are saved or not. Well, good, then John and I are agreeing that it sounds like he probably is a Calvinist, but it sounds like we're at least agreeing that our unity is the cross. Our unity is that Christ died for us, not these other peripheral issues. So good for you, John. But he does want to straighten me out about one thing. He says, John Calvin did not teach God saved us against our will, nor that we do not have free will, but that God changes our hearts so our will be to please him. This is a humbling doctrine where God is given all the glory. Please read Ezekiel 36, 22 through 27. Well, yes, I've read that, and I know that and many other scriptures, such as Romans 9, on a first glance, out of context, seem to support Calvin's doctrine of predestination. Well, first of all, John, thanks for your encouraging letter and your encouragement about my testimony, and we're certainly on the same page that this is fun coffee table shop talk, doesn't have to divide us as Christians. So we'll appreciate that. Second of all, though, John, it does not matter to me if one is a Calvinist or if he has any theology I disagree with, so long as we could agree on, I realize I'm not saying this so much to you, but for those listening, we must agree as Christians on who Jesus was, why he came, and how to be saved. Paul was concerned that the Corinthians agreed about the cross and not divide themselves over other matters. And my article was in response to Calvinists who I have talked to who get very concerned when others are not Calvinists. But, John, as for God changing our will so that it will please him, isn't that the same thing as changing us against our will? That's the way you worded it. God will change our will so that it will please him, but then he's changing us against our will. What's the difference? I've already read the various scriptures Calvinists use to support their position. However, my brother in Christ, thank you and blessings. Now, this next one is from E.P. Drama. He's writing about the things I said last week and also wrote on the San Diego Rostra regarding Scott Brown's victory in Massachusetts. And he says, regarding the written portion of it, nice article written. I added your site to my favorites. Well, thank you, E.P. I appreciate that. It's always nice to get an encouraging letter like that. Now, concerning the same topic, Alger writes, Bob, what the public doesn't want is the far left or the far right. We want a government that represents everyday people who don't live in either of the extremes espoused by most of our elected officials. when the Republicans retake the Congress in 2010, they would do well to remember this. The public will not be saying, bring on the right-wing wackos, only that we are tired of the left-wing wackos. That's from Algier. Well, Algier, you know, on a first glance, that looks good. That always seems right. Let's not be extreme left. Let's not be extreme right. Let's be down the middle. Let's be independent. Let's be moderate. But there are some issues that it's difficult to moderate. Either somebody believes abortion is okay or somebody believes abortion is murder. If they believe it's murder, are they supposed to go, well, I believe it's murder, but I need to moderate my views. See, it doesn't always work that way. And Algier, I would ask you to define the far right. The reason I challenge you this way is because the definition of far right is ever changing today. Most liberals, when they think of the far right, think of some kind of fascist teaching. And yet it is the liberal who wants the government to control every sector of our lives. These days, those who believe in less government are viewed as far right, extreme right. But by that definition, our forefathers, Thomas Jefferson and the others, were extreme right because they wrote a constitution with extremely limited government. It's only the judges who interpret it that are telling us the government isn't supposed to be limited. And 10 years ago, would you have believed the day would come when those who want to protect our own borders would be viewed as far right? Other country protects their borders. We can't protect our borders. How about marriage? 10 years ago, even a liberal would have laughed at the idea of calling somebody a fascist simply because he had the audacity to believe marriage should be defined as a union between a man and a woman. You see, as the left goes further left, the center looks further right. For me, it is no longer a matter of right or left as ends in themselves. Neither do I accept the fact that centrists alone are the only wise and balanced ones. Not if centrists are accepting the left's definition of what is too far to the right. Because by that definition, centrists are no longer centrists. They are moving to the left and just not calling it moving to the left. Now, Patty in Italy writes, Bob, thank you for the article on gay marriage. I am reading it little by little because it is quite comprehensive but very helpful. The issue of gay marriage and whether or not we as Christians should tolerate it has been really difficult to figure out, so this will help me to make a more well-thought decision. It's always good to hear from you, Patty. Thank you. We'll go to more of your emails. I have a very interesting one from Ann Polk. Ann Polk's been a guest on my show twice. She's considered one of the 100 greatest experts on homosexuality, formerly a lesbian herself. A couple of weeks ago, I read a letter from a homosexual psychiatrist who was married in the state of Idaho, where gay marriage is legal. And Anne is responding in a letter of her own to his letter. You don't want to miss this.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, when people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt. For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that The Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210, But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This letter is from Ann Polk, and Ann is writing to somebody who wrote me a couple of weeks ago. His name was Lauren, a gay married psychiatrist. I had written a really in-depth article, and I urge you all to read it. It's not that there's anything magic about my writing, but a lot of people are not willing to talk about the subject. And it's called If You Think Gay Marriage Will Not Affect You, Think Again. You can find it on San Diego Rostra. All kinds of comments, people agreeing, disagreeing, go on, write a comment of your own. But I read one from Lauren, and I should say Lauren was not agreeing with me, of course, but he was a nice guy. And I gave all kinds of arguments, psychological arguments, legal arguments, arguments about why allowing gay marriage, allowing us to change the definition of marriage between a man and a man or a woman and a woman is not a good thing, but without having to sacrifice any kind of compassion. Pretty much the end sum of Lauren's response was, well, my daughter used to disapprove of me having a gay lover, but she came to my wedding and she now approves, and it was a very emotional experience. Well, of course it was, and of course he loves his daughter, and I'm very sympathetic to where he was coming from, but he really hadn't responded to my points. So now Ann Polk, a former lesbian, is responding to Lauren. I think you'll find this very interesting. Lauren, while I appreciate you espousing your life experiences and views, I wonder about several assumptions that may need clarification. First, was your previous marriage to a woman, and through that relationship you became a father? May one presume that you left your marriage for another man? Second, your daughter embracing your emotional and relational commitment to another man does not prove that gay marriage is good, moral, or desirable by society as a whole. Obviously, it is desirable to you and your partner. You mentioned that it may be true that children are best raised in homes with two loving parents, but the reality is that most are not. Really? Are you seriously saying that most children are not raised by two loving parents? I am most certain that statistics would prove you quite wrong on this point. As for the beauty of heterosexual marriage and parenting, I am quite certain that in your mental health profession, hearing stories of abuse or childhood trauma may likely skew your assumption toward an unmerited negative. Ann Polk continues to respond. I am also concerned about the logic of your emotional appeal. My daughter approves, my church approves. Gathering support doesn't really deal with any of the valid arguments presented in the article. What if everyone thought the sun was really green? Outside evidence is needed to show which answer is correct or more correct. Believe me, I once used most of these arguments to support my previous homosexual life and went so far as to deny the existence of God in order to make myself more comfortable. I'm reading, if you've just joined us, from the words of Ann Polk, former lesbian, one of the 100 experts of homosexuality around the world, responding to an article I got from a gay psychologist last week. Ann continues and says, over the 22 years that I have walked away from homosexuality, I have found peace, freedom, beauty, solid same-sex friendships without the jealous baggage, creativity, marriage, motherhood, and meaning. There are many ways to evaluate the facts, but we had better be careful listeners so that we can support what is truly good. Much more is at stake here than one person or group of people's feelings. Our culture, society, and the well-being of children, our next generation, rides on the proper examination of truth in this tremendously vital area of marriage. I would urge the readers of this blog to stand in the gap during this critical time in the history of our nation, the gap of truth and compassion. Most respectfully and sincerely, Mrs. Ann Polk, wife, mother, author, and former homosexual. If you haven't had a chance to listen to my two interviews with Ann Polk, you can find them on my website, bobsiegel.net. She's a tremendous lady. Ann and I are old friends. I had met her as an undergrad years ago. She does a tremendous job with this. And I got to tell you, gay people who leave the gay lifestyle get persecuted by many gay people who have not left the lifestyle. And ironically, they get persecuted by those who are calling for tolerance. Now, Jim in San Diego wrote me about global warming. I read and responded to his letter a couple weeks ago. He's since written me a new letter that I didn't have time to get to last week, but I get to these things in time. And Jim says to me, and again, here, Jim is somebody who doesn't agree with some of the things I said about global warming. He seems like a really nice guy, though, and there seems to be a mutual respect here. So it's always good. Isn't it nice when people can disagree without getting all bent out of shape? I like that. God likes that. You like that. Isn't it bringing a tear to your eye? Anyway, so Jim wrote me about some things I said about global warming. I responded back to him a couple of weeks ago. He's written another letter. He says, thanks for taking the time to reply. You have far greater knowledge of religion in the Bible than me, so I defer to your position on the subject of God and nature. What he's referring to is he was saying, as Christians, shouldn't we take better care of the planet? After all, God and the planet, God and nature are one and the same thing. Well, that's a belief called pantheism, and I told him that, hey, if you want to be a pantheist, you can believe whatever you want, but the Bible does not teach that God and nature are the same thing. The God teaches that God is distinct from nature. So he's conceding that point. And I really appreciate that. You'd be amazed how many people make comments about the Bible and quote it out of context. And when you suggest that they go back and read it in context, they say, hey, I can interpret it any way I want. So I appreciate the humility of a person who says, okay, this isn't my subject. Well, now he brings up science. And I got to tell you, science is not my subject. So I want to have the same honesty and humility. But let me go on and read what he says. And I do have some responses afterward. So Jim goes on and says, however, with regard to your comment that many scientists do not believe the world is warming, I'll assert that you are incorrect. There are precious few scientists, not that science is a popularity vote, such as we see on the so-called reality shows, who believe the world is not warming. And those who do, very few of them are climate scientists. Having PhD after your name does not make you a climate expert if you are an engineer or a physicist. You also said that scientists were caught perpetuating fraudulent data. That, in fact, is not true. If you are interested in a description of the content of the stolen emails, please visit. And then he gives a site, realclimate.org. Got to tell you, I went to that site. That site was not up anymore. And I went, although I had already studied this issue, just to be really fair and to cross every T and dot every I, went to factcheck.org. Now, they have their biases, too. But I wanted to see what they said. And factcheck.org kind of defended these scientists caught in the fraudulent data, or at least did a pretty good job of passing on what their excuses were. But the more I read the excuses, the less convinced I was that the excuses were valid. Well, I will continue reading this letter from Jim challenging me about global warming when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Good projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back. Jim in San Diego had written me a letter about my comments of global warming. I had responded. This is his second letter. I don't know. Jim's not calling himself a scientist. He certainly has a broad view of science, broad knowledge of science. He says there's an extremely broad consensus in the scientific community about climate change. In addition to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, virtually every major professional scientific group that deals with climate and atmospheric studies believes the climate is changing and humans are the primary cause. Well, yeah, Jim, there was a time when scientists said we couldn't split the atom, too. You said yourself that it's not a popularity contest. So now you're going on and talking about how many scientists believe in it. It's kind of altering the premise of your argument, but that's okay. Jim continues, the American Meteorological Society, the American Geophysical Union, and the American Association for the Advancement of Science all have issued statements in recent years concluding that the evidence for human modification of climate is compelling. To look at it another way, a study was conducted in 2004 that analyzed 928 abstracts published in referred scientific journals between 1993 and 2003 that dealt with then subject of climate change. The 928 papers were divided into six categories: explicit endorsement of the consensus position, evaluation of impacts, mitigation proposals, methods, paleoclimate analysis, and rejection of the consensus position. Of all the papers, 75% fell into the first three categories. These are either explicitly or implicitly accepting the consensus view. 25% dealt with methods or paleoclimate, taking no position on current anthropogenic climate change. Remarkably, none of the papers disagreed with the consensus position. Ignoring the scientific consensus on climate change would be like ignoring the AMA's position on the link between smoking and cancer. In fact, there is an eerie similarity to the time in the 60s when Big Tobacco spent enormous sums of money casting doubt on the scientific studies that showed smoking caused cancer, heart disease, and other maladies. Just substitute big oil for big tobacco and the health of the environment for the health of the human body, although human health is affected by climate change, and you have a repeat performance. All it takes is a little doubt. So, Tim, those who have honest doubts about climate change are compared to liars from the tobacco industry? Jim continues, with that said, yes, there are a few actual climate scientists, a handful really, who refute that climate change is caused by humans. By and large, they have not conducted any legitimate search and submitted it to peer-reviewed journals for publication. They are certainly entitled to their opinions, but science must be backed up by rigorous research, not opinions. Well, Jim, maybe some of them feel the peer-reviewed journals are biased, but that doesn't mean it isn't legitimate research. And then Jim concludes, you also raised the issue that the Earth has actually been cooling for the past few years. You are correct. Temperatures have declined slightly for about 10 years. This is due to the fact that short-term natural variability has a similar magnitude as human-caused warming and can thus compensate for the anthropogenic effects. Of course, the warming trend keeps going up, while natural variability just oscillates irregularly up and down. So over longer periods, the warming trend wins and natural variability cancels out. Thanks for listening, Jim. Okay, well, Jim, let me respond to this. Just as you aren't claiming to be a theologian, I am not claiming to be a scientist, but I wonder if one needs to be a scientist to question an explanation about how colder winters really mean the Earth is warming. As you yourself admitted, the Earth has been cooling for the last 10 years. And I remind you that many who have taken the global warming position are now changing their rhetoric to climate change. You use the word climate change yourself. They're changing the rhetoric because first they were saying global warming. They can't prove global warming anymore. So they're going, okay, climate change. Well, the point I made a few weeks ago, and I said it kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's absolutely true. When somebody claims there's climate change, there's always the possibility, there's always, in fact, the affirmation that they are right because the climate's always changing. Now, Jim, regarding those emails, the fraudulent emails, they do exist. I have read them. They are extremely incriminating. Of course, those who wrote them are going to claim they were read out of context. I don't believe, incidentally, that anyone should have hacked into them. But there's an investigation going on by the very university where this happened. If they've already been read in context and the context explains everything, what are they investigating? Jim, many scientists do dispute global warming. They've written articles and books for anyone who wants to see them. No, I'm not a scientist. I will leave it to others to write about science with the hard statistics and data. My own concerns on this radio show are in the areas of freedom. If some scientists, if any scientists, are disputing global warming and others are not, debate is in order. I don't care how many are on one side. I just want to hear the debate, and I want to hear what the facts are and what the facts aren't. The politically correct powers that be should not try to silence debate, and that's what they're doing. Throughout history, there have been many periods of radical climate change apart from man, such as the Ice Age and its melting. In ancient Rome, there was also a time when the weather got warmer in an unusual way for many years. Having said that, freedom of speech and freedom to live our lives without government interference is always my chief concern here, Jim. If somebody wants to believe in global warming, that is their business. But when they start telling the rest of us what to believe, when they start telling the rest of us that the debate is over, this I take issue with. I do not believe there is any subject on earth that cannot be debated. Now, if you're interested, I could point you to meteorologists who do not believe we are responsible for global warming. Paleoclimatologist Dr. Tim Patterson, professor in the Department of Earth Sciences at Carleton University in Canada, would be one such reference. Willie Soon, physicist, astronomer. I know you said you didn't like physicists, but he's a physicist, an astronomer, and a climate researcher at Solar and Stellar Division at Harvard University Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. We should hear what he has to say. Also, a 2007 Senate report referred to 400 prominent scientists around the world who either dismissed global warming or at least were not convinced that people had anything to do with it. You can go to the U.S. Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works, December 20th, 2007, to check that out. I do want to thank you, though, again, for discussing this in a civil matter, Jim. Now, this is from Ron in the Bay Area. Ron says, Bob, I limit my TV to basic cable, so I can't enjoy my favorite channels like Fox. Right now, I only get HD on NBC on the basic cable, so I was forced to watch the SOU on NBC. SOU, of course, means State of the Union message. When you read SOU, you almost think you're reading something else the way he's saying it. Okay. He says, I almost choked watching the intro before the speech. A not-so-subtle bias in their comments. Anyway, it was much of what I expected. I particularly liked how Obama kept saying the House had passed and now the Senate needs to pass such and such a bill. Must have done it at least 3 to 5 times. Also, the VP nodding in support while keeping a frown on his face for much of the speech. Later, he began to smile. Well, that's probably because he had a little earpiece where someone said, Joe, smile. Anyway, bottom line, what's going on? I once heard, can't remember where, maybe goes all the way back to Marx, that one of the rules of radicals is the hammer theory. This is Ron in the Bay Area I'm reading for. Ron says, you cannot nail the coffin shut by just slamming the hammer down on the nail and then holding it there, pressing it into the wood. You have to take the pressure off by raising the hammer and preparing to take another blow. It's just how you do it. So for progressives, same applies. Apply full pressure, hit the nail, and then withdraw the force, biding your time and preparing for the next major push. I think 2010 will be like that as they try to preserve their seats in Congress. We shall see what it seems like. We shall see indeed, my friend. And I will see all of you next week. You're always welcome. Your questions and comments are welcome, too.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.